on 3AW 693.
Last week when we had Daryl Summers in to promote Hey Hey, he had done in 2 days 24 interviews. Gee. And I'm wondering how many you've done the last week for your book.
I've done, I'm closing in on 50 or 60.
It's amazing, isn't it?
But you often just go, you'll go to the ABC and sit in a booth and you'll be connected with nine different states, one after another. And you'll get to the point where you go, have I said this earlier in this interview or in the one before? It drives you insane.
Exactly. And I'm waiting for the big book launch. When is this and where is it?
There's no book launch. I don't think anyone... I think maybe Bryce Courtney would get a launch, but nobody lower than that in rank gets a launch.
Oh, well, this is sort of a launch tonight for you, isn't it? For our Nightline listeners.
Fire it out of a cannon.
Now, Nest of Occasionals, second book, as we've mentioned, and this is Tony Martin in studio, for those of you who have just tuned in.
Speaking to Simon Owens.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. I haven't finished, like Pete, I'm a bit of a slow reader, and I'm only up to the stage now where you've just started work in the army store as a young man with braces.
Yes, I worked in an army surplus store. It's not a place for humour, really. A lot of people come in camouflage gear wanting to buy knives.
And it's not the great place to be cracking gags, I guess.
No, it was a disaster. But we had... it was in the early days of home video equipment, and there was a home appliance section at the shop, so there was video cameras and things like that. So we would get in like 3 hours before work and use all the clothes at the Army Surplus Store as costumes to film sketch comedy programs.
Have you got any of that old footage anywhere?
I have got it somewhere. It's really embarrassing. It's really, really poor.
Good extras for the next project, though.
It's too lame even for YouTube.
I reckon you'd get hits. I'm stunned at the... Because I've also read Lolly Scramble when you brought that out. I'm stunned at the similarity of upbringing, just the way mums used to behave and the way families, the little arguments and tiffs they had, very similar in New Zealand to here in Australia.
Well, that's right. I read when I was about 17, Clive James' Unreliable Memoirs, and that's set in Australia. We didn't know who Clive James was, guy from Australia, but his book was like full of people rolling Jaffas down the aisle at the cinema, go-kart races going horribly wrong. And I thought, I kept looking at the back going, is this must be New Zealand. It just felt the same. So I find with this, you know, Cracker Night, things like that.
Yes.
The sex education film that you had to see at school. So many of these things seem to have been replicated here precisely. Although with Cracker Night, that was a public holiday when I was a kid.
Yeah, when I was young, it was Guy Fawkes Day or Empire Day.
But it wasn't a day off here, though, was it?
No, we just light a big bonfire at night or whatever.
And a guy? Did you set fire to a guy? It's like basically burning an effigy. Family fun.
I suppose there was a plan. Reading your books, it sounds like you come from a dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
A bit like the Osmonds.
There would be too much beeping. Our version would just be like a continuous high-pitched tone. Yeah, it's a very argumentative sort of a family. And I'm supposed to stop going on about it, but it's just too good. It's just the comedy material is just too much.
Have you had to change names to protect the innocent?
All the names are changed except your own family. You can't do that. That's too weird.
Yeah.
So I haven't used surnames because there's been so many changes of surname in our family.
There's been a lot of family feuds, haven't there, over the years?
My grandmother was feuding with my aunt for years for something like 45 years in a town called Tikawiti in New Zealand. And my aunt's still alive, she's in her 80s. And I was asking her about her feud with my grandmother, and she said that she had this amazing list. She said that the grandmother had tried to burn her house down, had cut through some brake cables on someone's car. It was like a Bond villain, basically. And it was full on.
But it's also sad that I don't think you've spoken to your own mum for several years.
Well, we sort of have an on-off. We'll speak for a while and then she won't speak to me and then it's quite...
She'd be proud of you, surely.
Well, yeah, sometimes. I do remember when I started doing comedy shows, she would say, for the first 10 years, she would say, well, it's no good life, is it? Waiting for me to do something as good as The Good Life.
Yeah.
It's, when are you going to do something as good as To the Manor Born? I think if I could have had my photograph taken with Penelope Keith,
she would have been happy.
That would have been more impressive than anything I could have done.
Yeah.
That's a personal highlight of mine. Was we had John Cleese on for a chat. He was coming out here to do a talk on hotels and how crappy hotels are. And we had him on for a chat, and I asked him a question because he was talking about motivation. And I can't stand those American-type
motivational
things where they come out and say, yeah, we're going to paint your room orange, and it's a lively colour, and you're going to love it. And I just think, oh, go away and let me get on with my work. And I put that to John Cleese and said, how are you going to come out here and try and motivate a country full of people who hate motivators?
That's right. Yeah.
And he said, oh, it's a very good question. And I can't remember what he said from that point on because I was just thrilled to know that John Cleese thought I'd asked a good question.
Oh, well, well done.
So there's something about that you know, standing beside someone who's famous saying something that's memorable.
Isn't that great? Well, now, you're twin-souled with a half-sister, aren't you, after your performance on Kath and Kim with the violin.
That's it. Well,
and you found a family member also plays violin.
Well, that's right, because in the first book I talked about I had hemochromatosis, genetic blood disorder. Hmm. You can't catch it. It's genetic. Don't panic.
What does it do?
And it stores iron. So iron refuses to go away. It just stores up in your body. So you've got to have your blood taken out from time to time to lower your iron levels. I am literally the Iron Man, Phil. This is what he looks like.
So you need a transfusion?
No, you don't. No, you just grow new. It's taken out a pint at a time. So you're growing new blood. And don't have any put in. It's not like Keith Richards of a night.
And who gets that blood, that discarded blood?
When I started, I think it was tipped down the sink. But now they will accept it at the blood bank because theoretically it's like the Johnny Walker Black Label. It's the top shelf iron-rich gear for the women that are short of iron.
How interesting.
Mm. I would have thought. I don't know if that's medically actually true, that the iron will then be of benefit to others. But I know that you can get it taken out at the blood bank.
Sort of picture that Grant Kenny would now go in for a top-up now that he's no longer Iron Man material.
Well, Susie Maroney, I think, has it. Dave Hughes has it. So many people have come out of the closet as being hemochromatoids.
Yeah.
It's one in 250 people.
But the ones you mentioned and yourself, you're all successful people in your own...
Well, there are other people who don't work in the same field, who work in...
But they might be good. They might be good at what they do, for all you know.
And some completely unsuccessful people may have it as well.
Sorry,
who knows?
Bad. That wasn't the question, though, was it? My sister. Sorry, you have to contact everyone in your family.
Yeah.
And I just discovered that there was another sister.
This half sister who's a musician
who'd been left off the records.
Oh.
As I, what do I say about that? How do I describe it in the book? I say, because I was talking to my sister about this and.
Tony's thumbing through the book
Here we go. Before that, I'd always been told my dad had three, not four, other children. Mum had supplied an exhaustive list of his shortcomings but left off one of his kids. So I met her, and she's like a prize-winning violinist from New Zealand. And then, yes, I and Kath and Kim was the worst violinist ever seen on Australian television. Jen Anderson, the master violinist, did an hour of trying to teach me to play the violin, just good enough to look like I was playing it.
Yeah.
And she stormed out going, there's nothing I can do with this man.
Is that right?
Disastrous. The guy who edited that episode of Kath and Kim where I played the violin actually told me he nearly jumped in front of a train. It was so hard trying to get what I was doing to match the music.
What tune were you playing or trying to play?
I don't know. I can't even... You know what? They didn't have one.
That wasn't decided until after he'd done it.
That was part of the problem. Like Ted Emery, who directed that show, he just goes, I'll be able to make this work in the edit. But apparently not. Digital effects are almost used.
Has anyone in the family threatened to sue you for what you say about them?
Not yet. Well, no, because, I mean, I think I come out of this the worst. I don't think I've actually said anything that bad about anyone living. But just the fact these things are being mentioned in book. And by the way, it's really only the start and the ending of the book. It's not all about the... It's not me tipping a bucket on the family for the whole thing. But...
Well, you wouldn't do that because you don't have a mean bone in your body.
Well,
so
it's
anything
funny.
You've
it's
done
meant
is,
to be,
is for comedic sense.
It's meant to be funny, but you're touching on serious subjects along the way. But you're not trying to do anything but get to some cheap jokes.
Can I ask who your influences are in your writing? When I read it, I tend to think... So Bruce and Phil are very big Barry Humphries fans.
Right, and I'm
a fan of the character, you know, Dame Edna.
Yeah.
But I don't quite get a lot of Barry Humphries' writings because I just wasn't from that era. But what I do glean from it, I see in you as well. You're very good at painting a picture of the little corner store.
That's weird because we never got Barry Humphries at all in New Zealand. I remember there was a Dame Edna special on about 1979. That was the first time anyone had seen him. And it was like... People thought it was a woman for most of it. We're going, what is this? We weren't even sure what the whole tone of it was.
Yes.
And we had that hot comedy you're talking about, like Sandy Stone, the comedy of how funny are those red tomatoes that have tomato sauce, those plastic tomatoes.
Just
the comedy of the wooden butterfly on the outside of someone's house.
The three ducks on the wall.
Well, see, we didn't have that. We got a lot of that from Fred Dagg.
Ah, John Clark.
John Clark, definitely. He was doing that. Am I? I'm going on too long, aren't I?
No.
I was wondering. Say. We have
I
to
never stop.
No, we have to take a break. But I thought some people might like to phone in and chat to Tony.
Sure,
Martin.
If Pete wants to call back, I'll have some more compliments.
No, but I think the many people out there are probably bursting to ask you a question. One I want to ask you now, not apropos of the book, but do you have any stage aspirations?
Stage? Well, I did amateur theatre. See, that's what I did first. And I love doing amateur. I had the most fun I've ever had doing 4 years of amateur theatre.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of trying to do it properly, but there's also a level of mucking around that you can't get away with in professional theatre. So I don't know if I could be trusted.
But you know, Simon gave me the idea. Would you ever consider a one-man show?
Well,
and doing some of your characters.
I've done stand-up, so that's kind of like
that.
But I mean, yeah, characters. I don't think I'm quite good enough for that. I'd have a crack at it, though.
I've always listed one of my ambitions. You a Groucho Marx fan?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
There was a stage show done by Gabe Kaplan from Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yeah, right.
And he played Groucho going through his life. And it is absolutely brilliant. And I always thought I would love to put that on somewhere and do that myself. But I could see you more in that role than me.
Well, you've got to get to choose
on
someone.
On account of at least you've got the hair.
You've got to choose someone who you look like. Like, there's so few people that I can actually look like. When I'm doing Hugh
Warwick
Grant,
Fairfax.
That sort of works fine, lovely. But I sort of can vaguely look like him with a wig. But yeah, Warwick Fairfax, James Valentine.
Yep.
The man from the Computers for Dummies logo.
Andrew Denton.
Andrew Denton.
Well, I don't really look anything like him, but I get mistaken for him constantly. Yeah. Literally every week.
Yeah.
And then people will get angry when they discover that you're not him. That's a new thing that started happening.
Well, you could always just say, yes, it's nice to meet you now.
I don't know if you can say, off in this time slot, can you?
Well, not with the flipper here. No, we're going to take a break to pay your huge appearance fee here tonight.
Oh, hang on, me.
And then we'll come back and take calls for Tony Martin on 969 100 693.